Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for the benefit of those intelligence agents who actually like to enjoy their job of surveilling the living crap out of everybody that poses a threat to the system in some small way, shape or form. Might be counterintuitive on retrospective thought. Anyway, my very special guests are joining me from the wilds of Europe and the ridiculously early morning. Very, very grateful for him staying up this late. Is Ole Johansson. Everybody talks about Scarlett Johansson. It's Johansson, bro. All right. It's like yo. You know, you ever seen that scene in Rush Hour? That's how it's pronounced. I believe so. Anyway, Ole, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Would you mind telling us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Yes, I have worked my entire life at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, and also in parallel for a number of years at the Royal Institute of Technology. And I'm a neuroscientist. I know a little bit about the brain, spinal cord, and the peripheral nervous system. And I have mainly been doing microscopy work, utilizing, for instance, fluorescence microscopy, light field and electron microscopy, but also doing a number of other studies, including statistics, epidemiology, etc. And my main topic the last 35 years has been the adverse health effects of artificial electromagnetic fields from various gadgets such as mobile phones, wireless internet, and power lines.
And that's probably the scariest topic of all, is it not?
I wouldn't say it's the scariest topic of them all, because nowadays there are quite a number of scary topics around, including what you aimed at before, surveillance. It could be politics in general, the use of various chemicals, nanotechnology, gene-modified organisms, and so on. And we see, at least in everyday newscasts, a number of different things going on around the world. There is quite a number of things to be scared of, and maybe the global warming issue would take place number one. But I agree, the health effects of electromagnetic fields, when you read a very extensive published literature, you do become quite scared, yes.
Now, in your fear, how do people normally react to this kind of information? Hey, that your cell phone, your wireless internet, basically your everything that you are around and surrounded by all the time, whether you're on those devices or not, is bad for you, dangerous for you, and has a lot of adverse health effects. How are people reacting to that kind of information?
Oh, that's a very good question. And I would say the most common reaction would be from, for instance, parents when I come to schools, also the school staff. They all become very angry, not at me, but at their authorities, health authorities, radiation protection authorities, their parliaments and governments, who haven't given them all the information, because after all, adults want to make informed choices. They want to know what they actually subject their kids to, for instance. And they do get, I would say, surprised when I tell them that they expose their kids to something that is found in a particular group defined by the World Health Organization. And this group is called 2B. And in it, you have possible carcinogens such as lead, welding smoke, diesel and petrol exhausts, formaldehyde, and DDT, but also electromagnetic fields in the power frequency range and also in the radio frequency range. And people, they suddenly realize that they force their kids to schools as well as leaving them back home in an exposure which is cancer classified. And so, that's a big surprise to them.
So they realize that they are now living in an environment 100% dominated by industrial level poison.
Indeed so. And also, you know, what is much more telling than what I ever could be as a scientist talking about scientific results is, of course, the major players. And then people really get very upset when I tell them, and this is not the secret. It has been, for instance, in Swedish major newspapers for the last 15 years or more, and the major players that have completely abandoned ship here will be, of course, I would say, the operators of telecom technology, the manufacturers of such. These two are hardly surprising to us, but also the radiation protection authorities, the World Health Organization, and above all the world's insurance and reassurance companies completely refuse to take any form of legal responsibility or economical responsibility for health effects of electromagnetic fields.
Quite possibly because the financial... I was going to say it's quite possible that the financial contributors of all of those separate organizations happen to be the same goddamn people who are running the... running the show.
Well, in Sweden it would be, because Sweden is very small, and you know, the CEOs in one company will form the board in another company and so on, and there are very few families and very few people that actually make up the sort of elite economy. And so that would be all right here, but maybe not over the entire world. But it is very telling, you know, and it's interesting to see. And I remember, and that would be 16 years ago at the meeting in London, 2002, representatives of, for instance, Lloyd's UK and Reassurance from Switzerland, and also small companies like If Scandia from Sweden, they all anonymously, they said together that for them, it wasn't a question whether it was adverse health effects or not. They were sure that such existed already 16 years ago. But the question was, who is going to pay for all the health effects? And they didn't want to do it.
And we're talking about health effects that are effectively, well... to say the same word again. I hate doing that in the same time you ever use people who use the exact same word in a sentence. Like, effectively, the effect is it's affecting everybody, right? So you've got how many different health conditions can be caused by this EMF-level radiation and things of that nature, how many mental, psychological, how many physiological, how many cancerous, and so on and so forth. And then you run the numbers and you look at the stats of the Western world and you see a correlation between all of these different effects that the EMF is actually having on people in test studies is actually what's happening in the rest of society who are bathing in this kind of cell phone and wireless radiation the whole time. Am I right?
Yes, you are right. And it's tempting, of course, to speculate and come up with hypotheses that quite a number of diseases and problems are at least partially caused by these electromagnetic fields, and above all, sped up. The increase in incidence in new cases per year could very well be due to this bathing, as you say, in electromagnetic fields. And don't forget, we are not only talking about humans. Every animal, every plant, bacteria, and so forth could be at jeopardy as well. And there are quite a number of studies on animals, on plants, and bacteria that are very telling and quite scary as well.
Now, recently in New Zealand, and this is the reason why we're having you on the show today, Catherine Smith, who started up a fronthead called Save Our Landlines NZ, to oppose a specific bill that's coming through New Zealand that is going to rip up all of the copper cablings and essentially replace a lot of our land-based communications with wireless towers, especially in those rural areas and things of that nature. What would you say to that approach?
Well, that has partly been done here in Sweden, but in our neighboring country, Norway, which are facing the North Sea and with terrible storms now and then, they actually decided to keep the sort of major parts of the copper landlines because they were the only ones that actually could survive these very heavy storms. The wireless systems were actually very susceptible to these dramatic events, and when they had storms and hurricanes, they lost contacts with quite a number of people in Norway, so they went in another direction. And well, I mean, from a health point of view, I would definitely tear down all the base stations for wireless communication instead.
Why would you say that? I mean, let's say I was a politician, the Minister of Communications or something like that. What would you say to me to make me believe that shutting down a huge communication system would be a health benefit?
Well, I wouldn't say that to you because you are only a minister for communication. You don't have any responsibility for health issues. I would go to the Minister for Public Health and tell him that you cannot look away from the enormous number of peer-review-based scientific publications, all pointing in the same direction, telling you that this may be very bad for public health, and I repeat, not only for humans, but also for other animals, plants, bacteria. And in the meantime, I would also encourage, and since I'm a Swede, I would encourage Swedish companies to come up with a solution which I coined many years ago to be tomorrow's green, human, and environmental friendly communication. Based on some other principle, some other technology. And of course, if Sweden would come up with such a solution, we would be able then to sell all the telephones, all the computers, all the power lines and so on in another format, but being hopefully then safe from a health point of view. And I mean, in the meantime, if you have a copper based landline system, and I was a few years ago lecturing in a school where they across the road had a wireless school, and on the other side they had a wired school, and of course they could agree quickly that the information that the kids got was of course the very same. It was the same images, the same music, the same texts, etc. So it doesn't hamper any educational system. And at least here in Sweden, children do not run around. That is, they are not mobile in the classroom. They sit down and use their wireless computers, for instance, meaning that they could just as well be wired with a shielded system, not subjecting the children to this colossal exposure as we see today. And as you know, already countries around the planet are taking steps to ban these exposures in at least school environment. And among these countries, you do not find Sweden, but you find countries such as the Solomon Islands, Uganda and Nigeria, Indonesia, Cyprus, etc., where such bans are to various levels taken into account nowadays. Also, France, for instance, they have similar bans. And the question is, of course, if you're a little bit cynical, does that mean that authorities and parents in Uganda, for instance, they love their kids more than parents and authority people here in Sweden? Yeah, well, maybe. The children go first, not the technology.
Well, it seems to me that the available information about technology is purposefully restricted, because I believe that the companies who are doing this know that it's dangerous. Just like throughout history, there have been innumerable dangerous products that have been released onto the market without any proper testing or regulation being done to it, or those tests were faked, or those reports were frauds and things of that nature. Okay, this is a long, sad history of humanity. This is what we do to each other, ladies and gentlemen. We invent something that people like, even though it's really, really bad for them. We tell them what it can do for them, but not what it does to them. So we can make money and accumulate power, right? And with that money and with that power, you can then bribe all of the officials whose official job title it is to stop you from doing the things that you're doing. So... have you found that as well, like with health ministers here in New Zealand, for example? It's like you're talking to a mafia don, right? It feels like I'm being pulled over by a corrupt cop in Czechoslovakia or something like that. You know, it's palpable that these people are in the pockets of these very influential and highly powerful companies. Do you get that same impression over there?
I definitely get the same impression, and I think your expression of a long and sad journey for mankind is very true. And unfortunately, a very close colleague to me, a professor at the Department of Epidemiology, Anders Ahlboom, some years ago in 2011, it was found out, and he was the sort of industry's man, you know, always saying that everything is completely safe, just keep on exposing yourself. But then it was found out that he worked for his brother, who had a lobbyist organization in Brussels for the telecom industry. So yes, the world is more rotten than I believed when I was a kid.
Well, it's sorry. Documentary done by James Corbett the other day talking about the establishment of the Federal Reserve and the banking system, right? And aside from that whole element of stuff, what it told was a story of very rich, very powerful men who were born into this wealth and power via their parents' interest. And because they didn't have to earn it, they felt entitled to it. And because they felt entitled to having more wealth than everybody else, they also felt entitled to take more and more off of everybody else. And gradually, over time, these groups of powerful men generally have taken control of the vast majority of stuff. Everywhere.
Yeah.
It's inescapable.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
You know, we're dealing with an intergenerational wealth families who have figured out that the greatest trick the devil ever pulled is convincing humanity that they didn't exist. Oh, there's no such thing as the Illuminati. Oh, Freemasons have got nothing to do with it. Oh, that's, you know, no, it's perfectly safe. All of these things are really well regulated. You know, we always want to take care of you, ladies and gentlemen. We're not just lying through our teeth for profits. And power? No, no, no. Why would we ever do a silly thing like that? The only thing we'd get out of it is unchecked power and huge amounts of wealth and luxury and comfort. I mean, nobody would ever do that. You see, we've been convinced that the good nature of ourselves is identical to the good nature of everybody else who we go to as an authority figure. And the problem is that the vast majority of authorities that I've seen in my lifetime have either become corrupted or were corrupt from the beginning. So the question is, if you are trying to regulate EMF, EMR, frequency violations and health effects, etc., you can't go to the system because the system doesn't want that to happen. They know perfectly well what's wrong and they definitely don't want to fix it. So how can we go to it? It's not about looking at authority to give us the solutions. I believe that we are the solution, each and every individual person, and their will, their force of will, is in fact what's going to solve a lot of the world's problems. What's problematic about that is trying to communicate that to people without the overarching propaganda mechanisms of the mainstream media diluting or completely deleting our message altogether.
I would agree to 100% with what you just said. And only to add, in Sweden at least, you know, media has been most often quite correct and extensive in informing their readers or listeners or viewers about various health effects and biological effects of artificial electromagnetic fields. But the general population in Sweden, at least, seem to be more occupied to update their Facebook profile, liking each other's YouTube videos and so forth. So they don't seem to pay real attention. And, you know, Swedes, adults, they are very well educated. They do have a lot of time, but they don't spend it wisely. And therefore, some years ago, together with a friend who is a priest, Johan Bonander is his name, we formed a think tank, you might call it, and we called upon various experts, journalists, reporters, scientists, filmers, members of parliament, etc., to come together and to try to digest what you are talking about, namely, how should we get the information to people in power, like politicians, for instance, in government, but also to all the consumers, because I agree with you, the consumers, they do have the real power, actually, and I will come back to that. And so if you could wake them, they could actually demand the changes that are critically needed. And some years ago, I was invited to the European Union, and we talked for several hours about electromagnetic fields, health effects, and so on. And then I found out that the European Union, there was only really one factor they were totally afraid of, and that was not other countries, and it was not lobbyist organizations and so on, but it was actually the consumers. And they said the moment someone stands up and say, no more of this, that would be the end of the European Union. And as you know, years afterwards, suddenly you have the Brexit, which is not the end, but it's at least the beginning of an end for such a huge organization like the European Union. And I just today read in a Swedish magazine that would it be a referendum today in Sweden, we would actually bail out of the European Union. More than 50% of the inhabitants are tired of this centralization of power and no insight. You don't know where all the money goes. Well, actually, you know where the money goes because you can just look at the parking lot outside of the European Parliament and all the offices in Brussels.
So coming back to that concept about people and consumers revolting against the system, there's some weird statistic, and I believe Mark Twain said there are two types of lies: lies, damn lines, and statistics. There was three types of lies, sorry. But speaking of which, activating, and you use the word awakening people to the reality so that they can then fight against it. It's not entirely dissimilar from how a chicken will alert the rest of the chickens that there's a predator nearby. Buck, 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 buck. You know that kind of thing, that very shrill voice that lets the other animals in your flock understand that there is a threat going on. How far does that voice travel? How can we enhance it? This kind of thing. But more importantly, what do people do to defend themselves against this apparatus? I mean, the political side or the corporate side away from it, in people's own daily life, they're on their cell phones, they've got their wireless running the whole time. Now, we had Paul Waddell from safespace.net.nz who came in here with a bunch of little devices and measured everything. I was bathing in about 32,000 microwatts. And it wasn't just one source of 32,000 microwatts from my wireless router. No. It was Bluetooth mouse, Bluetooth keyboard, the Bluetooth on the computer. And there were two computers doing that as well. So as he told me that I wasn't just getting bathed in one source of 32,000, my cells don't just go, oh, that's the frequency that's going on. Ah! It actually gets bathed in all of those all together. It's a cumulative effect, even though you're only reading 32,000 on the meter. And it was a frightening realization that my entire workspace was toxic, essentially. So he came in, we got wired mouses and wired keyboards and turned the wireless off, got a whole bunch of cables in here to plug into the computers for that kind of thing. We got down to 3 microwatts, right? And I was like, wow, it was just a practical thing that I could do to prevent my own workspace from being toxic. Nobody forced me to do that, but somebody helped me to do that. Somebody who had the devices, somebody who had the knowledge, somebody who had the skills. I had all the rest of the gear that I needed. I had the mouse and keyboard and all of that kind of stuff. I think those sort of practical examples are really, really helpful for people.
I agree, but you have to remember that also 3 microwatts per square meter is a colossal exposure compared to natural background into which you were actually born. So it doesn't mean that you have a safe studio or office, even at such seemingly low exposures. And you should remember that in countries like New Zealand and Sweden, the maximal public exposure, and I only now talk about the third generation mobile telephony as an example, that is a quintillion times above the natural background for that specific frequency range. So that's a 1 with 18 zeros behind. So it's a colossal, astronomical, or biblical exposure. And if you roam around in other frequency ranges, the difference could actually be bigger or actually far, far bigger than that. For power frequent magnetic fields, it's only in the order of 100 million times above natural background. Of course, it's still a colossal exposure. And this is also interesting because someone, as you say, has decided that you and I and everyone else should be able to withstand that kind of colossal exposures. And there is no demand for any pre-marketing testing or anything like it. But I have started, together with a number of scientists and entrepreneurs and inventors, to try to come up with some kind of solutions. We are just in the beginning of that process. And I forgot to tell you before that since November 15, 2017, I am retired. So I work from my home nowadays mostly, but I have collaboration with people that still have laboratories to use. And we will try to also enforce the idea of a pre-market testing round, at least some of the basic issues that has come up in the general scientific work the last 30, 35 years, and try to implement that to, if not make safe technology, at least safer. And of course, I'm aiming at to have a real safe technology as we used to have. You know, in Sweden, we had big black telephones made in what we call Bakelite, which is a formalin-based resin, and they were wired, and we talked with grandmother and so on, and we couldn't run around in the street and shouting to each other, but we could at least communicate, and that worked perfectly well. And maybe the future will mean that we have to, for health reasons, not economical reasons, but for health reasons, to take a few steps back.
Few steps back to reassess, or just simply get out of the frequency range of your own cell phone, because you talked about the major regulations here in New Zealand. Like I talked about, ladies and gentlemen, 3 microwatts in my office. Now that's still not ideal, but it's better than 32,000, right? But the regulations state that you're allowed up to 1 million microwatts under New Zealand regulation. Okay, now their philosophy behind that regulation is, if it doesn't burn you or cook you, then it's safe.
And also, don't forget that the regulations you have in New Zealand and in Sweden, and I believe it's not a million microwatts per square meter. I think it's 9 or 10 million microwatts per square meter. And it's based upon, as you say, heating effects that are acute. And also, in the testing that is made to arrive at these figures, you're only allowed to make one single call at most for 6 minutes and never, ever again expose yourself. Because if you do, then you will immediately violate this guideline or recommendation. And people believe that it's based upon studies in humans or animals. It's not. It's made in fluid-filled plastic dolls. And not even Swedes are fluid-filled plastic dolls, you know. So, I mean, this is just baloney, I think you say in English. This is just ridiculous. This is not a safety measure. This is just nothing.
On the show before, I talked about delay tactics that the government uses to, you know, keep cannabis illegal and things like that in the medical fields. And what they do is they have all of these rigmarole that you, the public, who are fighting for your health, fighting for your rights, you have to go through all this rigmarole. But in order to pass a piece of legislation that you want to fight against or whatever, they can do that under urgency, just like that. You know, there's nothing to stop them from doing whatever they want, but they throw out all the stops. Oh, we've got to have some committee meetings. Oh, you've got to put in some submissions. Oh, we've got to draft the legislation. We've got to craft the questions. We've got to do this, that, and the other. And that's not allowed. We've got to strike that out. It's not credible enough, and so on and so forth. These endless bag of tricks that lying, psychopathic scum. And I can say that on radio because I can prove it with objective evidence. Use to prevent themselves being brought to justice, to prevent themselves from having any consequences from the things that they do. Right? That's what I find particularly frustrating as an entrepreneur, as somebody who likes to get things done, Ole, is that, you know, just like you're talking about doing now. Oh, I see a problem. Why don't we just create a greener form of communication and then we'll blitz the rest of them? Okay, that's what people like us with a conscience and creativity think like. But if we had scumbaggery and ruthless efficiency, we'd think about it totally differently. It would just be like, nah, these guys are muscling in on our profits. No. Let's just shut them down. Oh, we can't legally shut them down? Well, what can we legally do? What can we get away with? What kind of ridiculously made-up BS could we possibly come up with? And then what ridiculous made-up BS could we back up that ridiculous made-up BS with? And then what kind of force, aggression, and lies could we back that up with if people see through the first and the second and the third layer of BS that we're throwing up? How many barriers do we need to protect ourselves from reality, from the truth, from human compassion, right? This is the system that I see. It's an endless maze, essentially, designed to trap us. But what you're doing, Ole, is creating the solution without relying on the people who have created the problem. Because, as it said, the same consciousness that created the problem cannot be used to solve it. Bravo.
Oh, that's a very good comment of yours. And, you know, I live on an island out in the Stockholm archipelago. And it's around 30,000 islands. And I often think about the islands here as being what I would call the opponents of various types. And if you go by boat, you cannot run up on every island because then you will never reach your final goal. You have to steer around and leave them behind you. And therefore, I would urge your listeners that want to take up this discussion, that don't spend time on confronting people on the other side, because that's a waste of time. It's much better to come up with adult, and I would sort of point to the fact-based solutions and demanding it. And if one or two persons demand it, that's of course too few. But I see around the world that there is a movement that is growing and growing by the minute, I would say. More and more people realize that they had to step up and ask for change, regulation, moratoriums, and so on. And things are, as I say, on the move, really. And I also see that I get more and more invited to give lectures. Just the last few weeks, I have been, for instance, at one of the big universities in Madrid in Spain. I was in England to give lectures in 2 days south of London. And before that, I went to the Danish Parliament in Copenhagen. So at all different types of levels, change is on the move. And we need, of course, more people that are awakened, as you said before. There is a wake-up call, really. And they have to start asking the critical and tough questions and not accept any evasive answers. They should step up and stand for what they want to have. And if they want to have a complete stop, that's what they should say then, you know. And in the meantime, as I said before, maybe somewhere in the world, someone will come up with tomorrow's green, human and environmental friendly technology, solving the whole issue and making it a real safe one. And today, as you say, there is nothing pointing to that this should be safe in any way. And there are also a lot of other layers. I want to just quickly throw in the introduction of the Internet of Things based on the fifth generation mobile telephony and wireless internet. But I call it not the Internet of Things, but the Internet of Totalitarian Control. This will be the perfect control instrument to monitor exactly what people, where they are, what they do, what they consume, what they are writing, and so on. And the question is, of course, to the general population in Sweden, in New Zealand, and all other countries, is this really what you want to have?
Well, the answer is not really apparent to people because that old saying, you don't know what you don't know. Kind of like when somebody's telling you some big lie or whatever, that there is a fact to contradict this. And you're suspicious that this person's lying to you, but you don't know what that specific fact is. Right? That's how they get away with it, because you're off balance, because they'll just keep coming up with BS with BS. However, the way that you counteract that is if they are saying something that you believe is BS and you don't know it yet, what the fact is that you need to put out to put them in their place, what you need to do is just start asking questions. Who said that? Where was it published? What magazine? Could you show me the reference? How did they conduct their trials? Did they, you know, these little simple questions, which somebody who's telling the truth would be able to rattle off just like that. But somebody who's full of shit will start dancing around the issue. Oh, I'm not sure if that's important. Well, there would have been various studies. There's been lots of, you know. You know, I love that kind of thing. And people don't understand what power that they have. And I've been watching some of Quentin Tarantino's interviews recently because I want to be a filmmaker writer. And he said something that I felt was universally apparent. He says, if you've got the passion to be a filmmaker, if you really want to do it, then you don't need training. You don't need to go to film school. You don't need anything except that passion and wanting to actually work on it and actually doing the work on it. Right? And that was it. He said that everybody's got that power within them to do precisely what it is they want to do with life. But the key here is that they get tricked into thinking, I'm good enough. I've done enough with my life. I'm satisfied with what I'm doing now. They didn't have that artist's burning desire to do something different, to do something grandiose, essentially. They weren't able to lie to themselves and say, you know what, I'm actually really great. I'm really awesome. I'm totally fantastic. I'm going to make something that's totally kick-ass when they're feeling depressed. If they can tell themselves that when they're feeling depressed, they can keep being active, right? He said he fooled himself with his own grandiosity in order to get himself out of depression. I thought, what a brilliant way of thinking about it, right? Now, we think about yourself, Ole. I mean, you're now retired. Congratulations. But now this is when your real work begins, isn't it?
Oh, that's very true. And I love what you are saying, because I've always said that you cannot train young people to become scientists. It's much easier for me as a supervisor to just sit down in my laboratory and wait until someone knocks on the door, and they don't need all of this education and training and so on, but they need the fire in their soul, you know. They must be very enthusiastic, and they must be very driving towards the future, and they want to test hypotheses and ideas. And of course, they were warmly welcome. But some of these highly trained students, they were actually boxed in thinking along old ways and old ideas, and they were unable to foresee future calamities. And so I certainly agree with you and Quentin Tarantino. Also, I believe you have read the package I kind of send out to people when they are going to start asking questions. And I tell them in this package a lot of, should we say, tricks. And one of the trick is, as you said, start asking for references, facts. And I also say, boil it down to questions that can only be answered with a yes, a no, or I don't know, or a number, a figure. Because then you will corner your opponent very quickly, and keep on, come back, repeat the question until you have the answer. And if they refuse, that's really an answer in itself. And don't be afraid, just sit down and think. But I also see, and I constantly come back to this, you know, it's very important that your questions are fact-based, not based on any dreams or ideas taken out of sheer imagination. You might think that Elvis Presley is still alive and walking the streets in Nashville, but believe me, he isn't. Try to use facts only, and if you do, then it's impossible to kind of move your stance. You will stand with your feet firmly grounded in knowledge, in realizations, in understanding. And from a sort of political point of view, that's a very tough opponent in itself, you know. But also, as I said before, think twice if it's worth the work to sort of confront various opponents from the industry or the political establishment or the economy part of the world. Maybe it's better to take another route, crisscrossing around the various stony islands to reach the goal you are looking for.
Well, you touched on what I learned in the first 2 years of media activism is that, number one, if you go out and you ask a question to somebody who's a known liar, are you going to get an answer that's worth your frickin' time? No? No? Okay. So you ambush person after person after person after person after person after person. You know, you do this for a year, and you realize, I'm getting nothing out of these people. Whilst at the same time that you're trying to ambush those people, at the same time, you're trying to find the activists who actually oppose those people. And there's a stark contrast when you ask a question of one, you get an answer that is a non-answer. When you ask a question of another, you get an Encyclopedia Britannica answer that just keeps going on and on and on with all the stuff that you never knew, because the media never told you, and the people who don't answer questions are completely incapable of telling you, right? So that's why I changed. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've been following me for 10 years, you'll notice that in the past 8 years, I haven't ambushed a single politician. You know? And that's why. Because I'd much rather interview the guests that we have on the show, because they'll actually have answers, solutions. They'll actually be worth time that it takes to interview them. This kind of thing. And it's surprising that that realization took so long to sink in. But that's how the human brain works, I think. If you have a belief structure, oh, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to attack these guys, I'm going to bring them down, I'm going to be successful and everything like that. But that belief structure is not backed up with facts. Human psychology don't really happen like that, boy. When people are oppositional, they don't like it. They don't accept your ideas. They don't accept your thoughts and things of that nature. When you're completely and utterly hopeless in your attempts to get any kind of reform out of irreformable people, change your goddamn game plan. Do something that makes their job obsolete, irrelevant. You know, what are the politicians doing today, Vinny? I don't know. I don't care. What am I doing today? I know, and I care. Right? This reproduction of a civilized society ain't going to happen by accident, and it ain't going to happen by permission, and it ain't going to happen because people are doing what they're comfortable with. You have to get out of your comfort zone, not put other people into an uncomfortable place. Get you out of your uncomfortable place. You're not achieving anything right now? Go out and frickin' achieve something. Suddenly that feeling that you had long ago when you were a child that was beaten out of you by school comes back. What was that feeling? It was curiosity. Curiosity is what opens up the entire world to your mind. That is what makes a scientist or an artist what they are. Because they have no choice but to obey that curiosity. That's why discoveries happen. Because people were curious about the answer. And they went out and they frickin' found it. And half the time, they didn't even find an answer. They became the answer. And it was inside them all along. They'd only been told over a long period of time to ignore what's inside you. And say that all the achievements that you can make in life are outside you. All the great people have already been born and died. Mm-mm. That's not the case. And if you're curious, you'll find out what that is, ladies and gentlemen. But, moving on from that, I want to give you the floor for a second, Ole. And could you actually explain some of the little factoids about what EMF and EMR actually does to people? Like, what are the direct health, physiological, or any other the effects that you know? What happens to us on a biological level?
I'm glad to do that. But before I do that, I want to still stick a little bit to what you said, because it was so very brilliant. And I would just like to add, don't forget to also use brilliant filmmakers and radio producers like yourself. Because in the media sector, there are quite a few excellent producers of various forms of tabloids, newspapers, blogs, videos, and so on, that could be highly useful. And I see excellent examples, and some of them are very, very short, for instance, containing the essence of a particular issue, and some are more descriptive, and keeps on for one or two or several more hours. And they are used for different instances, of course. But coming back to your question, it's very, very interesting, because when you look around in the scientific literature, you realize that this colossal exposure will elicit a number of different reactions depending on the type of biological model you use. And among them, you have impacts on the immune system, you have concentration capacity decreases, short-term memory losses, learning problems, effects on the electrical activity of the brain from, for instance, mobile telephony and also power frequent fields. You have impacts on fertility. And above all, I would say that maybe among the most scary parts are the genotoxic effect, meaning the damage to the DNA molecule. Both single and double-stranded DNA breaks are found after exposure. And these effects have also been shown by Henry Lai and his co-workers in the United States to be cumulative, meaning that the more you're exposed, the worse it gets. And really what keeps me awake in nighttime and on my knees praying to God that they are wrong is a team of American scientists that last year exposed bacteria to radio frequent fields from mobile telephony as well as from Wi-Fi routers. And they found that the bacteria, well, actually didn't happen very much. They looked fine and they behaved as they usually do, and they were proliferating, dividing, and becoming more numerous in number. But they became antibiotic resistant. And last year, the G20 countries had a special meeting here in Europe around the issue that more than 25,000 Europeans are put to a premature death because of antibiotic resistance. And it has been calculated that by 2050, more than 10 million people will die prematurely each year because of the antibiotic resistance. And these calculations have not taken into account this specific published study by Tahiri and his co-workers from 2017. So the 10 million might easily become, why not 7.4 billion human beings? This is really very, very scary. And immediately when I saw this study, I called a relative to mine. She is a surgeon up in Uppsala, north of Stockholm, an orthopedic surgeon. And I asked her, tell me, how is it actually with this antibiotic resistance and healthcare here in Sweden? And she said it's a catastrophe behind the curtain, you know. We are scratching our head every day trying to find out means to counteract the growing number of cases with antibiotic resistance. And this has also spread to the animal industry, where you have animals pumped to their neck with different antibiotics and developing the same type of resistance to the various antibiotic medicines. So this is scary.
And how is it, how those are affecting people just like in a hospital kind of thing? But in my experience, antibiotics in general are not the first port of call when you've got some kind of biotic contamination. You should be going after intravenous vitamin C or cannabis oil, which is antifungal, antimicrobial, and a lot of the natural products and things of that nature. But ultimately, you just need to keep your body's pH level very high by drinking high pH water and not drinking, having too much acidic foods and things of that nature. Because once you've got that, you've created essentially a good, decent environment through which bacteria and a lot of the things that might infect you don't want to live anymore. And since I changed my diet within the last, couple of weeks or whatever, I don't feel pain anymore in my back and my shoulder all the time, you know, because a lot of that inflammation's gone down because a lot of the things that the bacteria were feeding off and killing me with, they don't like to eat good food like I do. So, Ole, thank you very much. Do you have a website there? We've got a couple of seconds left just to get that out.
I don't have a website, but people can, of course, contact me using email. And that's ole.johansson500 at gmail.com. But then I urge people to keep their questions as short as possible, because every day I'm completely flooded, which is in a way a very nice flood, because it tells me that more and more people are up on their toes. They are awakened thanks to people like yourself and other in the media business. And they are bringing out the information to everyone to consider seriously.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Ole Johansson. We'll see you again sometime, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And I do want to send out a special thanks to all the new patrons and all those new people who've set up automatic payments into the Kiwi Bank. That's the New Zealand help leg of the journey here. We're looking for global freedom. And some people have been signing up automatic payments into that PayPal, as well as a few donations coming through there as well. And I want to thank each and every one of you for every single cent of your hard-earned dollars that you give to somebody like me, who just gets up really, really early in the morning and edits the living hell out of his own stuff for personal amusement. You know, essentially, ladies and gentlemen, the show isn't here to have money as the main thing or popularity as the main thing. If anything, I believe, and in fact I have experience and kind of know, that as soon as you search a certain level of fame or a certain level of income, your life becomes worse, not better, worse. But until you reach that certain level of income, you don't know. You think you want it all. You think you want everything. It's the price of fame, ladies and gentlemen, and the price is high. There's nothing more important than helping the world to achieve the next state of human evolution. The second renaissance, ladies and gentlemen, where our beliefs get taking a back seat to the facts, the uncomfortable truths that we know work. So what would be really lovely, ladies and gentlemen, if you would start your own radio show, if you would start your own YouTube channel, if you would start your own Facebook page, looking, sharing, commenting, these kind of things all under fair use, very easy, anybody can do it immediately, right now, go to your cell phone, open your Facebook and click the go live button and comment on something that is your opinion. It matters not what your opinion is, you will learn what it is as soon as you start expressing it. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to have confidence in yourselves. I want you to have confidence in the future of the human race. I want you to have confidence that tomorrow will be better than today. I want you to have hope, but not BS hope, not something to believe in, but to know that you can make a difference by just not doing nothing. My very special guest joining me today, still, is Ole Johansson, and we managed to get his webcam working finally while broadcasting from the fjords. Well, not the fjords, but anyway, Ole, welcome back.
Thank you very much indeed, and please excuse me, I tell all your viewers that the first hour they became listeners because my webcam didn't work, but now it's fixed, as you say, and I hope people will appreciate also seeing me. May I also comment upon what you said initially about happiness and luck and earning a lot of money and so on. Some years ago, the European Union did a very big survey among its countries and citizens, asking people what made them actually happy. And it turned out that the most common answer, actually regardless of country, was a short chat with someone that I don't know, like in a bus or in a coffee shop or something. You talk with a person for a few minutes and you exchange ideas and experiences, and that was the most common answer. And then Sweden, we got very excited about this investigation, and it was decided that it should be replicated, but we should turn instead to all citizens of different ages. We should only talk to kids. I think it was up to the age of 14. And instead of asking them what made them most happy, they were asked what they wanted to have. Was it a new mobile phone? Was it a new bicycle, a new computer? What was it? And the most common answer, and this is kind of heartbreaking actually, was that they wanted to have more time with mother and father. So that was Sweden some few years ago, and that's really not the hallmark of a true democracy. And as you say, I see very often when people gain a lot of property, income, things, cars, boats, whatever, they're kind of dragged down to just maintain all of these toys. And it takes more than 24 hours around the clock to do it. And they get more and more stressed. They have to earn more and more money. And some of them actually step out and say, no, I won't do this any longer. I will return back to my frugal life I had beforehand. So it's a very interesting comment of yours.
Well, it's born out of that neglect from my own family, I guess, because when it comes down to it, if you're a talk radio show host, the chances are very, very good that you're some kind of narcissist. Now, what kind of narcissist are you? Are you a malignant narcissist? Do you lie, cheat, steal, you care about nothing? Or are you a benign narcissist where you actually learn from people who are better people than you how to behave in a civilized society, and what actually does good, and what will give you recognition and love and the attention that you need without hurting and destroying the world in the process?
Oh, I never heard that term, but I love it, you know, to talk about narcissism in such a way. And of course, you would prefer the latter way. And that's really also the way the typical Renaissance human being would have acted and will act in the future, to really pay close attention to other person's experiences and listen carefully and not pull yourself up on any horse before you are ready for it. And it's a very nice idea you propel forward, and to be a benign narcissist. I would love to be that, but I guess as a Swede, I'm a little bit too shy to even be a narcissist, you know.
Well, one can only hope. the other thing is, the lack of familiarity of somebody else's countries. Like, we're doing a song with my band, practicing it the last weekend, right? And part of the first lyrics is about having signs of wanderlust in foreign lands, and then showing your disgust, craving the comforts of home and not compromising until you get them. And it occurs to me that we're unfamiliar with how everybody else lives. And it's that inherent curiosity of that point of difference that really defines us, I think. That's why people like to listen to people who've got different accents. That's why people like to hear about things they've never heard before. And this show's essentially a replicant of a family unit kind of thing. We try to give that attention and that detail and that sort of, I don't know, for lack of a better word, fathering to a degree to the audience. Not like they need it and they're inferior or whatever. It's just that we all freaking need it, and it's so lacking in society these days that strength to stand with your shoulders back and to be open and to be caring and to be loving at the same time as not taking any bullshit.
Mm. And don't forget mothering as well, not only fathering, you know. I worked for many years with gender equality, so therefore I'm always keen on pointing that thing out, you know.
Well, what's interesting is that because that thing has been pointed out quite so often, the fathering aspect has gone down and down and down and down and down and now needs even extra attention on it to bring it back to an even keel, because man and woman, even on a physical, biological level, we fit together and we spoon and so on and so forth. There's a relationship. One is dominant in the left hemisphere of the brain that deals with facts, that deals with evidence, that thinks black and white, and the other one deals with the left area of the brain that thinks about big pictures and colors and feelings, and one is incomplete without the other, essentially. And the reason why we've got so many, you know, what we call personality disorders, narcissism being one of them, is because that balance has been struck out. You're not getting an adequate teaching and love from your father to show you what a good man is, and you're not getting an adequate distance from your mother sometimes, so that she can't control and dominate the father's parenting techniques, that kind of thing, because that's often happening nowadays, where you'll see a man's natural reaction to being in an environment wanting to do something fun and a woman saying, no, that's not good enough, that's not dangerous, he'll do nothing. And he'll continue to do nothing until she's out of the room or goes away for the weekend or something like that. That's just how guys are. But parenting ain't supposed to work like that. It's supposed to be a partnership the whole frickin' way through. You're supposed to be holding hands. And this extends from the family unit out into the general populace of society with the political sphere. Because if you've got one side of thought, be it facts and evidence or feelings and general ideas, dominating any field, especially in politics, you're going to run into problems because there's no balance in those equations.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I agree, indeed. But for me, this is some kind of uncharted territory. I'm not an expert at all on this, and I believe many of your viewers would have a lot of very important comments about it. So I trust we leave it to them, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, getting back to the EMF and the EMR kind of stuff, that stuff's starting to cause mental disorders as well, you know, ADHD, ADD, that kind of thing. And I wonder what's happening with body dysphoria and that kind of thing, because this whole red flag, red meat issue about transgenders and such and blah, blah, blah. And I wonder if there's a biochemical element in there behind getting exposed to radiation in your cells and it messing your brain up and confusing your sex. You know, stranger things have happened. But anyway.
Well, I haven't really seen any data on it at all, to be honest, so I cannot really comment. But it's, of course, a possibility, naturally.
Now, getting back into this, we talked in the first hour about when you're trying to advocate for something as you are, which is safer electromagnetic technology that doesn't, you know, cause all these varied harmful effects, and how that would be easy to do if there weren't enormous roadblocks in the way put up by all the government agencies and the companies that are making the devices and so on and so forth, who seem to band together at these times of crisis to save themselves and kill everybody else. I always admire, but I'm curious as to why and how activists can keep doing that against such a machine.
In what way do you mean to...
To grind up against that kind of thing, to read the documents, to go to these hearings, to do the research, and to constantly keep grinding against something that completely tries to ignore and disband and discredit you. That kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I see what you mean. And, I mean, it's kind of a constant battle in one sense. But at the same time, I always tell people that don't sort of go into or see confrontation, because some of these major players, you cannot in any way rock their world. And it's better to steer around and go forward to knowledge. And I know some campaigners and activists, they kind of love going into confrontation, but I think it's much more important to look for solutions. And trust me, very many of these major players actually are interested, at least kind of behind the curtains, to look for such solutions that could be practical in many ways. And I'm sure that within a few years, you will see that the market will change and the technical solutions to cell phones or laptops or tablets or whatever will make them actually look and function in another way. And some countries are very keen on this. I could just mention, for instance, Malaysia, Norway, the neighboring country to Sweden, and very recently also here in Sweden. There are entrepreneurs and inventors coming forward. And sometimes together with representatives from operators, from manufacturers and whatever, and they are really looking for solutions. And just a few days ago, I had a fantastic experience because there was a newspaper article in Dagens Nyheter, which is one of the major newspapers here in Sweden. And it was a colleague to me that works in the field of sperm cell quality and sperm cell counts. And I tried years ago to get him on board to help us to investigate the papers that have been published regarding mobile phone exposure and sperm cell quality. And he completely refused. He didn't want to get entangled in any way, you know. And I felt he didn't believe at all in what I told him. And now, a few days ago, I saw a newspaper article where he was quoted saying that the dramatic reduction in sperm cell quality, like in Europe, may have something to do with the exposure from cell phones and laptop computer screens. So he has certainly come around 180 degrees, I would say. And I couldn't help smiling in a sense, because some years ago, it was the opposite. He didn't believe at all in it.
Mm. Well, healthy testicles, basically, they're cool and they've got airflow, essentially. So when you've got a warm cell phone relatively close to them, not only electronic rays, but just the general heat of a cell phone near them, that's not good. And plus, where do you have your laptop? On your lap, right over your balls. So sperm reduction, you say, color me fascinated.
And, you know, there are already quite a number of papers that have been published, controlled studies where they have exposed sperm cells and saw changes in their morphology, in their motility, a reduction of such, a reduction of the sperm cell count, and so forth. But these papers have question marks, if you see what I mean, and therefore I have urged people to try to replicate them, but in an even better format, even more controlled, because there could be other confounders. The culprit may not only be the exposure, there could be a combination with other issues, including chemical exposures. And to rule that out, more detailed studies are needed. And as I said before, I tried and tried for years to get them on the board, but I failed. People didn't want to be part of it. But now, a few days ago, suddenly they start talking about the possibility as a reality.
Well, it turns out that fluoride is one of those chemicals that greatly, greatly affects fertility as well. I mean, what do you got, fluoride in your salt there?
We don't have very much fluoride exposure in Sweden. It's not like in other countries where it's put in the drinking water and so on. But of course, I agree, that's one of many chemicals that could be one of the confounder factors here, yes.
And then, of course, you think of the huge quantity of soy products that are basically in everything. That affects that affects estrogen levels and can decrease the sperm count as well. So, and then, of course, if you've been given a vaccine, there's even worse side effects there. So imagine for a moment, ladies and gentlemen, that the whole world and everything that you do on a daily basis was specifically concocted that way to kill your sperm. You know, it's almost that bad.
Well, I wouldn't say that it's deliberately done, but when you see a list of the, let's say, the most common 500 exposures that you are subjected to each day, including GMO systems, nanotechnology, electromagnetic fields, chemicals, and so on, it is actually surprising that any sperm cell or egg cell is alive at all. I mean, there are so many very poisonous, toxic exposures, and I'm surprised that men and women around the planet even allow it. And at least in Sweden, there is a discussion, and you mentioned, for instance, estrogen-like chemicals, including, of course, all the plastics that may mimic the estrogen hormone molecule. And here in Sweden, we try to be resilient and to collect plastics and bring them to special units and so on. But Well, much, much more can be done, definitely. And worldwide, it's catastrophic, as you know. I just saw a newspaper article some days ago about albatross birds, and they had dissected these birds, and they were completely filled with plastic products, which they pick up from the ocean surface in believing it's something to eat.
Or eating fish, and then the fish who have eaten it get digested in their stomach, but the plastic doesn't. And what have we got? Like, I forget, it was some ridiculous statistical or whatever, but irregardless, people are always worried about climate change, right? And whereas I think about more immediate threats, for example, the ridiculous amount of plastic in the ocean, you know, that's killing the food chain, like the whole food chain. It's like we starve to death in the next 10 years if we don't do something about it, kind of thing. You know, climate change is 100 years off. How about we? Because in the process, I think, of, let's say, converting all plastic technology to hemp. Hemp plastic, which is biodegradable within 90 days, we wouldn't have that problem anymore. And if anything, when the fish ate it, it'd be actually quite nutritious for them because it's got a lot of cannabinoids. You know, that kind of thing. Simple freaking solutions. And you were saying about this different approach between the activists who go up and get angry at the system, that kind of thing. Those are the activists who wind up committing suicide and getting cancer. All right. I've known a lot of them.
I don't know if they get cancer or if they commit suicide, but I mean, sometimes you need to get very angry. We can agree upon that, but it's not always the best and constructive way, and it's not always the way that will make other people listen to you. Maybe sometimes it's better to sit down, be calm, and as you say, look for very good solutions, but then we must also remember for instance, the product fleece, which is in sweaters and trousers and so on, which was put forward as the solution to all the PET bottles around the world. They should be grounded down and made into soft fleece for your baby, for your children, for yourself, for your grandmother, etc. But now it turns out that's a horrible product because it will then release microparticles of plastic when you wash it. And for instance, here in Sweden, there are quite grave discussions now to completely ban fleece products since they evidently release tons and tons and tons of these microparticles. And the sewage system cannot handle it. There are no filters that could stop it. So it runs completely straight out into the Baltic Sea, and then we are again. You have it within the fishes where it shouldn't be. So sometimes the solution can actually create a worse scenario, and we have to be very open-minded, and I would call it adult, and admit to that, yeah, it looked good, but it wasn't. So simple, you know, and I've always said to people that don't be afraid when we talk about human development, that human development, like any journey, sometimes must mean that we take steps backward. Don't be afraid of that. I mean, sometimes we must give up and say, well, it looked so good, but it turned out quite disastrous.
Yeah, and these are little lessons you learn along the way. I mean, a old friend of mine, he was filming a gig, and he wasn't allowed to put his camera behind the bar, so we left it under a table at a bar, right? And surprisingly, it got freaking stolen. So it's just like, okay, bro, see, that's money in the bank right there. That's a lesson that you just got taught. Mm-hmm. Learn it, right?
Yeah.
There's certain things. I mean, Mel Gibson talked about that concept as well when he was started Renaissance Pictures. He said he had these university fees, he called them, whenever you would do a movie deal with someone and they would take your money and screw you over or something like that. He says those were university fees. These are the things that teach you. And it's in line with my own philosophy as well, that the vast majority of the most important experiences and the most valuable experiences of your life have been those that have cost you quite a lot.
Yeah. And you know, Dalai Lama always tells you that you shouldn't speak ill of your opponent because he or she will teach you patience. It's very much the same, you know. And as you say, some of these lessons may be costly, but at the end, you and your surrounding fellows will learn from it and be happy. Always be open to learning new things, because that's life, really, a long, long, long process of learning, constant learning.
Well, for some people it is. In fact, I've heard an interesting statistic the other day that was like close to 80 or 90% of children who were tested before the age of five had like genius level IQ, right? Like a genius level productivity. But then once they got to age 16, it had dropped to like 20%. And then by the age of 35 or whatever, it dropped to like maybe 5 or 2% or whatever. So there's something that we're doing to our kids to destroy their genius and stop them from expressing it. And we call it education.
I mean, no, that has actually been quite a lot on the Swedish agenda too. I mean, the whole phenomenon of schooling, is that a way of nurturing children to grow, or is it actually to box them in, to make them a copy of previous ideas and thoughts and facts and whatever? And I hope teachers, and I know teachers are very good at this, that they find kind of a balance. I mean, you do need to learn some basic tools and ideas and facts from earlier experiences, but then it's also very important to open windows to the unknown and to stimulate children, not to think within the box, but try to think outside of the box.
Yeah, there was a little girl one time, I think Sir Ken Robinson told this story, and she was in an art class, and she didn't normally pay attention in art class, but in this one she did. She was furiously drawing something. The teacher came over to the little girl. She said, "What are you drawing?" And the little girl says, "I'm drawing a picture of God." The teacher goes, but nobody knows what God looks like. The little girl goes, "They will in a minute."
I love that, you know. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, that's really amazing. Oh, I like that.
You know, kids are great like that, and they've got that wit, that freaking brilliance about them, and we strangle it out of them. We strip mine their freaking potential, right? We don't actually allow them to really discover it. Now, I wonder what play.
But I mean, at the same time, it's important to say that, of course, mothers and fathers and teachers, and they want children to grow, they want to support them, they want to help them, and they believe that they are doing very good for them. So it's important that we have a general discussion in the society. What kind of tools should we use? Because after all, I don't think anyone is sort of evil or grim and want to destroy a child. I've never come across that.
Clearly you've never heard of a satanic pedophile cult, but...
Well, but I mean, they are so rare compared to all common teachers, parents, and whatever. So 99.99% of human beings want their children to grow up, become very good citizens, learn, and be happy and content with their life. And, of course, we fail. We all fail in that respect. But it's interesting to have this kind of a discussion with you, because it touches upon how should we actually perform a schooling, for instance. Should it be done within a classroom, or should it be done somewhere else? Or should we look for combinations? And I see today how schools look like, and I do see the advantages of the sort of free schooling system, for instance, in Sweden. But I also see the disadvantages, and not only for the children. There are huge disadvantages also for the teachers. Again, maybe we need to be brave enough to say, hey, we need to take a few steps backwards. That's human development.
Well,
I was trying to make a point about the, like, I've got nephews and nieces, and my brother and sisters have those little devices in their hands almost all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And they're completely distracted, and I wonder what's happening to their development as a result of that, because statistics are now coming out that the amount of social skills that kids have, their ability to deal with conflict, the ability to be assertive without being aggressive, these kind of behavioral attributes that you would be akin to leadership, essentially, they're going down. And I can't help but see a tremendous disadvantage for the youth having been raised on technology in front of them, distracting their attention from actually developing their own human interaction skills.
Mm-hmm. And also, at the same time, with basically only one publishing house around, and the publishing house is called Google. Everything is Googled by children, meaning that Google decides what is the fact, what is knowledge, what is current belief in various areas.
What's even worse than that is that they use your search engine optimization to make sure that you get reinforced what you already think.
Yeah, yeah. And no, I think there is a lot to be done within the educational system. And I do believe that in our countries, people are aware of it. But at the end of the school day, as you say, it's tempting to just give kids their tablet or their cell phone and allow them to roam around in the Googleized world. And I'm not so sure that's the best way to teach kids how to behave in a complex world, actually.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, if you wanted to be in a good world, you know, there's a balance between natural environment and technology, okay? I want to be in a high-tech society, but I don't want to be in one that doesn't have really, really good care of the environment and a complete understanding of holistic, complex systems management, so that you've got things that are protected and not allowed to be destroyed. It's like, no, don't throw that cup on the side of the road, bro. What are you doing? But it's made out of biodegradable stuff anyway, by law. Oh, okay. Well, in that case, it doesn't really matter. Imagine that. A society that was so high-tech that all of the things that we do today that are really bad for the environment and bad for ourselves had been engineered to not only be good for us, but good for the environment as well. What if the things that you throw away that were made of plastic actually had complex vitamins in them and that kind of thing, so that when you threw a piece of plastic out the window onto the side of the road, it would fertilize the grass there?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but that sounds to be, for me at least, a very complex and long road to reach fertilization. I would just go to the neighboring farm and ask for some manure, and that would be natural and hopefully without plastic, and maybe you don't need the plastic at all. But at the same time, you know, I hear from the, I don't know the English for that, do you say wrapping industry, you know, that produces all the things that you wrap food products and gadgets and whatever in, they want actually to accelerate the amount of plastic per person. They want to produce more and more and more. And for me, it's obvious that the footprint of the plastic industry is not good. It's not good.
Well, yeah, I mean, there you go. You've got psychopaths in control of major corporations that make major decisions that affect the whole world, right?
And I don't think they are psychopaths. You know, that's to make it too easy for you. I think they are just greedy.
Well,
and that's very natural,
greed,
you know.
Greed and morality, they have to be done in balance. I mean, as Gordon Gekko said, greed is good, but I believe that greed without any kind of moral conscience, on the other hand, is bad. And no matter how greedy you are, if you still have a moral conscience, there's certain things you won't do. Psychopaths don't have a moral conscience. Psychopaths are often prone to getting promotions more than the average person, and they only represent about 4% of the population. But the reason why they're able to get a promotion is because if there's two other people up for that promotion, one who's been coming in early every day for the last 5 years, and another guy who's been doing the same versus the psychopath who just got employed like maybe a couple of months ago or whatever, he'll start telling rumors about those other two people and then destroy their reputations behind the scene with lies get himself to the top. So what's happened essentially at the largest corporations, the concentration of psychopaths is almost identical to that of the general population, about 4% in the upper management. But what they've found in a study is that the ones who are in the highest positions rank the highest on the psychopath scale. So there are the worst psychopaths at the very, very top is the thing here. And what we do often when we've got a conscience is that we mistakenly believe that everybody's got one, and therefore every decision must have been made with a conscience, and they wouldn't be that bad. And the sad fact of the matter is there are people who've been sexually abused as children and had massive neglect, who've never had their social skills or their neural pathways open to love and the activity of their mammalian brain and their neocortex, and they survive completely within their reptilian cortex. And the only way of not feeling dead inside is to be having sex, doing some kind of extreme sport, doing a drug, or getting into a fight, or getting some kind of attention and adulation off of somebody. And they absolutely hate anybody who tries to sway them from that. Anybody who criticizes them, they have aggressive responses immediately, and they'll do and say things that ordinary people can't even fathom. And you get left in the dust just confused, utterly confused, because you can't make sense of it. And that's because you're trying to make sense of insanity. It's not going to work.
No, I agree completely with what you say, but at the same time, you also pointed to a very important fact, namely that 96% are not psychopaths. And I really want to tell them to stand up and step up and take control of these situations, because I've seen very close up, actually, the works of such psychopaths, and I agree completely, but it has been done since all the others were doing other things. They looked away. They didn't take their adult responsibility. And after all, 96% is far, far more in number than 4%. So many times, in Sweden, we often say, you get the leaders you deserve. Meaning that if you don't take your own responsibility and step up and talk and discuss and confront and whatever, then you have allowed them to take on the whole arena for themselves. And of course, anyone, I guess, would take that opportunity to get into power, to get more money, to accelerate the production of various items, even if they, as you said before, even if they are actually toxic to the environment or to animals or to human beings, they don't care. But we must care, the rest of the population. And therefore, programs like you are doing are so extremely important, because that could make people listening to you and your invited experts to start thinking for themselves. And as we talked about, I think the first hour, I have inaugurated this institute of common sense for common sense, because very often it's a matter of common sense. If you have an election, for instance, don't allow these psychopaths to be elected. Elect someone else. And just before you called me today, there was an excellent television program about female leaders in politics. And that was extremely interesting to see, although I felt they had mixed some of the arguments in an unlucky way. But nevertheless, I think the time has come to have not only human rights, but should we say planetary rights. We must think, much broader. If we introduced, for instance, mobile phone radiation around the planet, we must think very carefully, not only for human health, but animal health, plant health, bacterial health. And we haven't. We haven't done that, you know.
Dr. Paul Connett, Professor Connett, was talking about fluoride, and he says that there's this thing in science called the precautionary principle, which means that 1/10 of the lowest dose that causes harm can be considered safe. All right? 1/10 of the dose that causes harm is considered safe. That seems quite an interesting principle, right? Now, if that principle were followed, the vast majority of the things that are happening in society that people have got a problem with or whatever wouldn't freaking exist. It's just people ain't following the rules. Like, I dreamed up a political party called the Common Sense Party, you know, and one of the laws is fraud will now be illegal, you know, because every company commits fraud on massive scales all the time, and they never get prosecuted. What would be an interesting thing is that the protection of corporations that they apply to their leadership should, in my opinion, be revoked, because if a company does something, somebody made that decision. The person who made that decision, if that decision was a criminal decision, should have criminal charges laid on them. But you can't do that. You can only lay criminal charges against the corporation, who can only pay money in damages. And if they make more profits doing crimes than they do having to pay damages, they'll continue to commit crimes, because that's just good business. What are we encouraging here?
No, I certainly go along with your ideas there, you know. And for many years, I have urged in public lectures someone to step up and take a complete personal responsibility by signing a watertight document saying that if this product does harm, then I will personally, as a CEO or a board member, take complete responsibility for it. And so far, no one has stepped up. In spite of the fact that the products we're talking about, like tablets and laptops and cell phones, are sold to us as completely safe. But no one dares to sign such a document, which should be completely safe to sign, since the product is safe, which is not the truth, of course. And I think the whole idea of fraud is extremely important to discuss. And we have just recently, yesterday here in Sweden, seen yet such an example where a blind man or woman could see in the television news that the persons being interviewed about the huge economical scandal, they were just lying. They were completely lying. And it's a discouraging thing for the voters and for the citizens, because they feel there's no idea to do anything. And I say the opposite. Even if your contribution is very small and you feel you're not making such a huge difference, try anyhow. I mean, that's a human responsibility. Always try, even if it turns out at the end that you didn't move a brick or two.
Yeah. DDN, don't do nothing. I mean, see something, do something. You know,
yeah.
See something, say something. That's kind of like a telltale, tattletale sort of thing. Oh, somebody else has to take care of it. Oh, I have to send an email to this person. They'll take care of it for me. Hey, bro, you're the one who noticed that there was a problem right there. Take some personal responsibility. Freaking do something about it. How's the world going to be a better place unless you become a better person too?
No, I live myself, you know, on an island here in the Stockholm archipelago, and it's in the order of 200 persons living here all around the year. And for many years, I have been the only person taking all the plastics, as we talked about before, to the mainland, because we don't have any system to take care of plastics here. But, you know, plastic doesn't weigh anything. You can easily take a big bag and carry it inland, where there are systems that will take care of it. And I've done that for years, and I calculated recently that I brought to the mainland in the order of 6 to 7 metric tons of plastic. And this very morning, because I've had to go to the Stockholm city and back again, on the ferry, I heard a man say to me, "Oh, what do you have in these big bags?" "Oh, I have household plastics that are going to be thrown away, but in the correct way." "Oh, that's very impressive," he said. "I've heard about that." And then a girl said, "Yeah, and now I think one or two other families are starting to do the same." And I don't want to sort of brag about it, but you become a role model or an example, and people see it's all right, you can do it. And maybe it doesn't matter for the planet now, but just imagine if 7.2 billion people around the world start to do the same. Then it matters.
A waterfall starts from one drop of water.
Yeah, indeed, yes. Or, you know, information starts with your program. Well, then you have an avalanche of realization and understanding and knowledge.
Yeah, I do every show, actually. Well, especially when I'm talking with intelligent people, and that was sort of something I was talking to my wife about the other day, is that conversations with people who aren't talking about anything important no longer interest me. Like, I just can't hold my attention. I'm just like looking around. I'm looking for my way out of there, and it's that kind of thing. This is a waste of my time. Right. Mm-hmm. And it occurs to me that maybe I've become spoiled by my show, you know, because I always.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you do have the opportunity to, of course, talk to and meet people that have been thinking quite a lot. And I feel often the same. And it's a feeling of humbleness. I'm very humble, actually, realizing I've had the opportunity to listen to you, to Dalai Lama, to great presidents around the world, Nobel laureates, etc. And they have brought forward ideas which I couldn't come up with, but I could listen and emulate it into my own thinking.
Yeah.
And then suddenly a lot of things become obvious, and you realize I just have to do this. If not for me, at least for all the bacteria, the plants, and all the other animals, and all the other human beings.
Do it for the bacteria, ladies and gentlemen. They deserve
yes,
it.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Well, it was also occurring to me that when you're engaged, particularly on air, you understand that there's an audience, right? And what's interesting to me is that I get from a lot of my audience members that, you know, especially ones that live with their family or who work at jobs and things like that, that they get that kind of boredom. They get that sort of frustration with things going on around them, and they feel like they've got no choice about it. But the thing is, I felt that for a number of years before I made the decision to like, nah, I'm not going to do this anymore, and just quit my job, and haven't really had one since. That's the sort of thing. How far are you willing to be pushed before you start doing what is right for you? And it's interesting, you do have to push people into a corner in order to do what's right for them sometimes. But it's not ethical to do that. It's not right to force other people to live the way that you want them to. You can only present them with a better way of life, and eventually that idea will click. Eventually. And if you have an emotional attachment to other people accepting your ideas and emulating your behavior, you're going to run into a lot of disappointment.
Mm-hmm. And also always, as we said before, to be prepared that even I, of course, as kind of an expert, may be completely wrong. Remember the concept about the fleece cloth, which was manufactured as the solution to PET bottle waste, and then some years later on it turned out to be a huge mistake, actually. And so we shouldn't brag about anything or feel too much confident. You should always question yourself and prepared to listen to new voices and new facts and new scientific investigations. And as we said before, take a few steps back and don't be afraid to do it.
Yeah. I also find that marketing's got a big hand in all of this. You know, one thing that's kind of like ironic and like the Coca-Cola Corporation, they're now selling a brand of Coke that's sweetened with stevia, you know, a natural plant and that kind of thing. And I'm just sitting there going, these people have brought out worse product after worse product after worse product. And now they're telling me, oh, we're going to do it healthy this time. And I'm just like, I'm not buying it. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be scammed anymore. And I think once you reach that critical sense that, hey, there's actually certain entities in this world that you should not trust, regardless of what they say. Political parties are a kind of entity that gets racked up there with those kind of corporations, you know. Whatever these people are telling you, if it's making you feel good and making you want to support them, stop. Think.
Mm-hmm.
Are they lying to me? Are they obfuscating the statistics? Do they have a profit incentive? Are they some form of scumbaggery? You know, these are the critical questions in your faculties that you need to have if you're going to be supporting anything in a public way. So I would like to, of course, remind people, ladies and gentlemen, that this is indeed a listener-supported show and has been for close to 10 years now, ladies and gentlemen, thanks to your help. I was a young man when I started this, and I'm still technically a young man by some standards. And it feels great to not have to work at a slave job and have my potential essentially robbed away on a daily basis when there are more important things that could be done for humanity with my time. Today, ladies and gentlemen, I'm recording with Ole Johansson. Now, Ole, you've got an email there, so in case people in Sweden or have any more questions about EMF and EMR need to contact you, could you just rattle that off for us, please?
Yes, my email address is Ole, O-L-L-E, dot, Johansson, which is J-O-H-A-N-S-S-O-N, 500@gmail.com. And write short, because I'm flooded with emails, and I try to answer all of them, but if there are very, very long stories, then it's very hard to do it, of course. So write very short your questions if you have any.
You know, there you go. And I do want to thank you for staying up late, and thank myself for getting up early to do these little things with you, because it's like, folks, we had so much trouble, like, back and forth with the emailing, what time is this and what time is that, you know, Sweden and New Zealand on American Freedom Radio, that's a clockwork nightmare orange, I'm telling you, oh my God. Anyway, what's important to really take away from this is that a lot of the devices that we use, even the devices that I'm using right now to inform you about the threats of the devices I'm using right now. Okay, that's the kind of how messed up the sort of situation is, folks. And sometimes we wouldn't be exposed to that information. I wouldn't be exposed to that information or those realizations if it weren't for doing this show. So I want to remind you one more time, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. And please start up an automatic payment into that KiwiBank account if you are a New Zealander, or an automatic payment into the PayPal if you're from overseas or have got a credit card. And lastly, those people on Patreon, if you sign up there, we get you a whole bunch of goodies as well as everybody else. Please let us know if you have donated by getting us your email address. Thank you very much for supporting the show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Ole, and we will see you again sometime, folks.
Well, that would be lovely. Thank you so much. We'll be right back.